Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us. Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Our guest on Take It From Us today has an amazing story to share with us. Josh Coleman was a gun athlete. He had aspirations to run the 800 metres for New Zealand at the Commonwealth Games. A cancer diagnosis changed everything for him. His life was tipped on its head, and as you will hear, his is a story of ultimate survival. Josh has had to beat the odds many times to become the man, the husband, the father he is today. He's had to draw on an inner strength he didn't think he had to not only overcome cancer, but many other hurdles his body decided to throw at him. And soon Josh will get to fulfill his dream of running for New Zealand on the world stage. We hope you draw as much inspiration from Josh's story as we did. Josh, nice to have you on Take It From Us. Welcome into our program.
Hey, thanks very much for having me, Kent. It's a real privilege to have a chat with you.
Over Easter, you got to spend some time at home. Tell us about Greymouth and what it was like for you growing up as a young fella.
Oh, Greymouth's a special place to me, Kent. I mean, it's quintessential New Zealand. I mean, you just expressed the fact that you had a pint and a pie halfway there at Arthur's Pass, you know, and, you know, a lot of people think Greymouth and the West Coast are a bit behind the times, but it's a valuable place, you know. It was first established in the early 1800s, and, you know, it's a real foundational town, and it's got rough weather, so it's kind of representation of life, you know. Work hard, persevere through that tough weather, and, you know, the sun shines, and it's majestic and beautiful, and I think that's what's a replication of life. You know, sometimes we have those hard times, difficult times, but if we persevere and we're patient and we're persistent, things do come good in the end.
Well, obviously, Josh, unpack your health battles over the years and also the stoicism that you've leant into. But in your darkest times, did you lean into Greymouth as a town and think back to what it meant to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the town itself, but the people within it, you know, it's really community orientated. And for me, connection is the foundation of health. And when I thought of the people that had my back and were helping me, you know, that really pulled me through my very, very difficult times.
You had a few, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had quite a few, some would say. It's been very tumultuous, up and down, but my life's pretty good now. Still have a lot of issues, but it's a lot better than what it was, mate. I'm not in Melbourne in a hospital bed trying to contemplate taking my life. So, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I noticed when I was looking at your profile on your website, it almost seems hard to believe that not only are you surviving, but thriving and sounding so optimistic about things, given that you've gone through deep depression, a stem cell transplant, medically induced coma, multiple rounds of chemotherapy, graft versus host disease. I have to be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure what that is, but I'm sure you can tell us. Multiple heart attacks, plus you were living away from home in Australia for 5 years.
Yeah,
and I'm guessing at times your mood was so low that you were thinking of alternate options to living a healthy life. Was that fair?
Absolutely. You really encapsulated it well there, Kent. Yeah, a lot went on, and it's hard to fathom sometimes, you know. And when I talk about my story, I get this kind of prediction error. You know, my life's so good, the sun's shining right now where I'm talking to you, and it's like how I feel. And I've had a lot of storm clouds above my head for a very long time, and I've had to battle with that and try and poke my head above that cloud. And I can assure you, Ken, it's been, excuse the language, but fucking difficult, mate. It really has.
Yeah.
no two ways around that. But I am here, I'm still alive, I'm still breathing, and I found real meaning and purpose within my life through the chaotic times that ensued that you've just clearly stated.
It feels like you're a man that leans into metaphor.
Yeah, I love reading. I'm a big fan of logotherapy, which means healing through meaning, established by Viktor Frankl. He wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, which had a profound impact on my life when I was first diagnosed with cancer and quite suicidal when I read that book. And he just really, I would say, evoked my human spirit in a way, Kent. Just saw what humans were capable of overcoming and persevering and going through. And I had him in the back of my mind. And as I said at the start of the conversation, you know, connection's the foundation to health, and you don't have to be alive to connect. You can read stories and get inspiration and encouragement from these people that have gone through so much. You know, all you have to do is read World War II and Viktor Frankl. He endured for 3 years in 4 different prisoner of war camps. Just remarkable, absolutely remarkable. You're still holding a positive mentality through all that and finding meaning and purpose within his everyday pursuits. Just really held me steadfast together, just pulling me back from the edge of despair, I suppose.
Well, and that was an amazing book. I was recommended that book 10 or 15 years ago, went and bought it straight away, and like you, it had a profound impact on me. And really, he beat the odds, and he was able to keep himself going through all of those years in a prisoner of war camp because, if my recollection is correct, he essentially said to himself, they can strip you of your dignity, they can strip you of your clothing, they can take everything from you, but what they can't take is your hope, your optimism, your sense of purpose that I have in my head. They cannot take that from me. And that powered him through, and that book probably has changed a lot of lives, I would suggest, including yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was in the top 10 most influential books in the 20th century in America. So it's sold over 9-10 million copies. So I'm sure it's had a profound effect on multiple people. And that quote that you just stated, it's, you know, he states about the last freedom that we have when everything's stripped away. And literally his life was stripped away down to his bare nudity. And that was his attitude. He could still choose his attitude. And that was his conscious choice. So for me, when I was in that negative state and my mind was in turmoil, I could still choose my attitude around it. And I'm not saying I was positive and happy all the time, no way, but I always could pull myself out, reflect on my attitude, and choose an attitude to pursue forward. I know Viktor Frankl had a lot of hard times as well through his 3 years of suffering, but we do have that conscious choice. And as he said as well, a powerful quote, suffering ceases to be suffering once the moment it finds a meaning. And, you know, once we find meaning within our suffering, it comes a lot easier, and we can find meaning through those powerful connections. And that's what Greymouth had for me, those powerful connections, and that was meaning. And I lived for those other people, especially my mum, who was there holding my hand every day.
And at one point, of course, you were a very fine 800-metre runner for New Zealand, and you had aspirations to go to the Commonwealth Games. How did your life change from an aspirational, fit, strong, healthy young athlete? This is beginning 5 years in Australia and trying to beat the odds.
Yeah, I mean, I think having that running foundation, that physical foundation, really helped me, enable me to be on life support and, you know, have a high heart rate. But seeing my physical self, when I identified myself as a physical strong man, you know, my work, I was a line mechanic and I worked outside, and I was physically, that was my identity. It was caught up in physical attributes. And all of a sudden, chemo strips you down to a skinny little alien. And I woke up and saw myself skinny and weak, and I was fatigued and tired and in pain. I really couldn't associate myself with the person who I previously was, and I didn't know who I was. I lost all purpose. I lost all meaning. And my mind became quite confused because I thought this could potentially be me forever. And that's when my thought process completely changed, and I went against myself, and I couldn't control those thoughts. And I thought about really contemplating taking my life. And it was a near attempt when I was on the balcony outside of a place called Rānui House. And I remember it vividly. It was a tough day. My cancer was out of control. My mind was out of control. And I woke up and I saw myself, and I was just screaming, you know, what's going on? I couldn't control it. So the one thing I could control, at that time, I hadn't read Viktor Frankl's book. I lost complete sight of my attitude, so my control was taking my life. And I went to the balcony, put one foot over, And then the wind hit my face, and just serendipitously turned around and I saw my mum's cup of tea there. She'd gone out, and I felt her love come to me, and that pulled me back. And that was the meaning potential that pulled me back from ultimately making a life-ending decision, Kent. But yeah, it was that connection to my mum that just pulled me back in that sporadic moment.
Have you told her that?
Yeah, she knows it very well. I mean, she knows how much I love her. She knows the story, and she knows how much her love and her care and kind kinship and her warmth has just helped me through my adversities. She's been a big pillar in my life, Kent.
Yeah, I lost my mum recently to dementia, and I had the real honour and privilege of speaking at her funeral, and my sentiments were pretty much what you've just said. And I'm thinking, man, you know, I'm 47, and okay, if I live to a ripe old age of 100, mum would have only been around for less than half of that. But what a profound impact that she made for me. And I think about all of the decisions she helped me make, Josh, some of the dumb shit I used to do, and unsure about, do I do it this way? Do I do it that way? Just to be able to lean into her wisdom and her knowledge. And I know not everyone gets a parent like that, but I can imagine that your mum has been just a rock for you, and someone that I'm sure in your darkest moments you've really spoken to and perhaps sought out her wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not even her wisdom too, Kent. I mean, it's just her presence, and we've just had a wee girl. But the mother and daughter or child relationship is inseparable. It really is. And sometimes she just didn't have the words, but she just had a hand to hold, Kent. And that meant so much. And we talk about depression and suicide and things like that, and people don't know what to say or do. But I think it's the ability just to turn up, just to be in their presence and know that you're there for them. Because sometimes we just don't have the words. And my mum definitely didn't have the words, but she had love, and it was unconditional, and it was always there. And she just held it tight with her hand, with her hugs, with her kisses, and that physical touch.
Yeah, and having just recently been through that grieving process myself, I think I've come to really appreciate that point. Yeah. Is that not everyone knows what to say. You know that people feel sorry for you, they feel sad for you, and that's sympathy. But really just reaching out and acknowledging, hey, I don't know what to say. Maybe the text message I just sent to you was really clumsy, but just the fact that I'm thinking of you is real empathy. And I was actually blown away that even the simplest messages of support, hey man, hope you're going well, thinking of you and the family, shit man, they meant a lot, right? They meant a lot. And I've sent so many of those messages myself over the years thinking, oh, I don't really know what to say, but I've got to come up with something. But you're just not sure how that will land at the other end, and you've got to figure that it's a good thing just that for your friends to know, or in your case for you to know that you've got people just there for you, even if they don't know how they should act and what they should be saying.
Yeah, I mean, because what's the right thing to say in such a tragic situation? What is the right thing to say? Nobody really knows.
No one knows.
However, you know, I had a good friend. She used to just write me letters, and I'd look forward to these letters just typing up, and she might have a funny joke in that. And I had a good friend that would just turn up called Hamish, and he'd just sit there, and I'd fall asleep while I was getting chemo, and I'd wake up and he's still there. No words were spoken, but he was still there. So it's that association of I'm here, I'm present, I don't know what to say, and that's okay, but if you need me, I'll be here. You know, I've just had a coffee with a lady called Sarah, and she worked for Canteen at the time, and I've just told you that story about taking my life, and that's when I wanted to reach out for help, because prior to that, I turned everybody away, all the psychologists, all the counsellors, because I didn't want that stuff. You know, I'm a man, I can deal with this, this is the way I'm going. I've just caught up with her, I haven't seen her in 6 to 7 years, and she was the one I reached out to. The reason why is because regardless I said, go away, I don't want your help, she kept turning up. So that built trust. So if we keep turning up for that individual and we don't have the words to say, but we turn up, we smile, we're present, it builds trust. And when we're in despair, you know, all of a sudden we know who we can turn to. We know who we can call. And I called up Sarah and she got me a counsellor, a psychologist to talk to.
You've been through so much, as we've just referenced a few minutes ago.
Mm.
What was the worst of it?
It's it's really hard to pinpoint, Kent. I think all of it, the whole lot, to be honest, but I think being in Melbourne, I think being in Melbourne, to be fair, if I'm going deep here, I mean, I suffered tremendous pain with trigeminal neuralgia, but I had a lot of people around me then, and I was in an environment that I knew that was physically tough, but being in Melbourne by myself with no friends when I was having chest pain and I was lying on the street curb, clutching my chest, my body was locking up. I'd just recently broken up with a girlfriend, and I was really, really struggling and really battling physically, mentally and spiritually, all three aspects. But it was three things that really held me together. That was Viktor Frankl, my belief in God, and being able to regulate my breath in that moment, because they were one things that I could do to kind of take my attention away from the pain that I was in, if that makes sense.
And the pain was pretty bad, eh?
Oh, it's hard to describe. I mean, everything in my body was getting attacked by this new transplant, so my immune system came from somebody else, so my whole new immune system, my DNA had changed, was attacking my body, so that's the graft-versus-host disease we're talking about. So my body was kind of gluing itself together, essentially, and just going down to the supermarket, which was only 150, 200 metres away, was like walking an ultra-marathon, Kent. It was extremely difficult. My eyes felt like they had razor blades in them. My mouth was extremely dry, and I felt like I was in the desert, and my body would just lock up. I've had to sit down. I've got pain in my chest. And I was very suicidal, very depressed as well. And I'd just go home and just lie down, exhausted, completely exhausted, going, how can I make it through the next day? But it was just those small things of deep appreciation, love, hope and gratitude for those fundamental relationships that I'd established on the coast and throughout my journey as well, because I met a lot of people that had passed away. And I thought, you got to live for them. You got to live for them. They're not here, you know. I had a good friend, Adam Newcomb, a good mate of mine. He lived across the road. He passed away from bowel cancer as well, and he passed away when I was in Melbourne. I flew back to speak at his funeral, flew back, and you know, it was those people that didn't have that opportunity to feel the pain that I'm feeling, because that gave me a reference that I was still alive, that I'm still here, that I'm still breathing. Something good will come, something good will come, just like Viktor Frankl. So those connections, those profound connections, really held me together, Kent, in those difficult times, especially in Melbourne.
Was the stem cell transplant what turned things around for you? That saved your life?
Yeah, it saved my life, and then it started killing me as well at the same time. So just to explain it, our immune system is derived from small cells in our bone marrow called hematopoietic stem cells, another factory of our cells to make all our white blood cells, red blood cells, and platelets. So mine had a genetic mutation there, and it was not functioning properly, so they had to be replaced. So they'd wipe me up with high-dose radiation, high-toxic chemotherapy. It's like Nagasaki when they're dropping the atomic bomb on Japan, just obliterating everything. That's what it's like. It's tough treatment, and then they have to bring in new stem cells. My donor was from Germany. We can talk a bit more about that later. She was from Germany. She was a young girl, so it was a mismatch. It was a bit of a cross match there, so it wasn't an exact match due to my tissue. And then from that, you can get graft versus host disease, which is called GVHD. So basically, my whole new immune system, my blood DNA had changed, as I said, was going to attack every part of my body. You know, my eyes, my mouth, my organs, my skin. But it specifically attacked my stomach, my skin, my eyes and mouth. And I got that GVHD and the immunosuppressants, what they gave me. And steroids weren't really working, so that's why I had to get to sent to Melbourne at the time. There are only two New Zealanders at the time getting this treatment. It's quite specialised treatment, and that's why I got sent to Melbourne, to help down-regulate this overactive immune system.
And how long ago was this?
I got sent there in 2016, and I was there for 5 years, yeah. Yeah.
Without ever being allowed back here?
No, I was allowed back after about maybe 18 months. Initially, Kent, I was supposed to be there for 6 months. So they said, oh, you're going to go over there for 6 months, live there for 6 months, and you should be under control. We'll have you on low-dose immunosuppressants and you'll be good to go. But my body didn't play that game. It started working quite well in the first few weeks, but unfortunately, nothing's easy with me. And I had a massive heart attack. I ended up having 12 heart attacks, which put me in the Melbourne hospital in the cardiac unit for 24 days, deciding what they would do with me, give me a heart bypass or stent my left main artery. I ended up stenting my left main, but the GVHD got out of control and flew up again and started attacking me, and I had to get back on intensive treatment, where I was getting treatment at Peter McCullum Cancer Centre. So, yeah, I was playing the game of getting better, then getting a flare-up, getting better, and then having a flare-up. So I was there for about 18 months, and then I started flying back and forth, and then I'd have an issue, then I'd have to stay back over there for 6 months, then I'd fly back and forth, another issue would arise, and I'd stay back there again for another time.
Have any scientists or researchers tried to figure out what's so special about you and your body as to how you've successfully got through everything?
I don't know. I recently did a six-part talk, a nationwide talk for the Blood and Leukemia Foundation, and I was lucky enough to talk to most hematologists around New Zealand, and they all said, you know, GVHD is the hardest thing to treat. They honestly don't know how this treatment in Melbourne actually works, what it actually does. But it does work in some regards. Obviously, it doesn't work for some people, but it does. It does help some people. So they don't know the answers to it. However, I believe once my mental state was changed, my immune state changed. There's this thing called immunoception developed by Aisha Rolls. You know, it's about the placebo effect in a way. If you're thinking more positively and you've got purpose and meaning in your life, something you're actively pursuing, your immune system gets enhanced by the positive feelings within your mind. So, yeah, that's called immunoception. So that's what I think helped me. Not saying it's a cure or anything like that, but I do believe that played a significant part once I changed my attitude and I could see a positive outlook and I was having meaning and purpose within my life.
It would make sense, doesn't it? And I think I've heard scientists talk about this before, that if you're going through trauma and if you're going through anything that requires surgery or a cancer or whatever it might be, that however it's very hard to measure, but if the survival rates are increased through positive thought, being optimistic, maybe being hopeful, feeling some form of gratitude, things like that, it sounds like you really leant into that.
Yeah, I did, and I think, I don't know if you've heard of the Grant study. It's the longest study that's been recorded. It was started in Harvard University in 1942, still ongoing right now. And the main correlation, what they've plucked from the study, was kind of two things I really talk about. And that was one, having strong, meaningful connections, strong relationships, and knowing people had your back, that you were part of something bigger. And two was having a positive outlook, that you had a meaning to fulfill in your life, that you had purpose and a drive to work towards. So they were two main attributes really that constituted someone to live a long happy life, and that was a better marker of health than what your cholesterol levels were. So I do believe how important connections are and the positive outlook.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy, and I am your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
Start again. I try the new one on. It might the way it looks. thinking on the street lights blinking. I just need to clear my head. Always doing me talking, they think they both know best. Look a lot like mine, and my own poison tastes a lot like wine, and I drink that shit like all of the time.
Have you got something happening in the arts, entertainment or event world? Then Kick Arts would love to chat about it. Email us at info@kickarts.org.nz. Kick Arts, Aotearoa's one-stop shop for all things art, entertainment, theatre, events, books and more. Join us as we chat with fabulous guests, mixed with great Kiwi music and lots of laughs. Kick Arts, every Sunday 8pm here at Planet FM.
Senior Focus is a reflective radio program designed for those 50 plus, where you can listen to a wealth of knowledge and expertise and insights coming from within our senior community. Our range of topics and guests stretching from the personal to the professional, from advocates to inventors and heritage buffs, will offer unique perspectives. Our Senior Focus program is on at 5:25pm on Sundays. Or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus.
Diversity, the cultural diversity, the many languages, and the enrichment through all the different cultures, religions, faiths. I think that's fascinating.
I love going for really early morning walks under the Harbour Bridge. I love being able to get in my car and in 40 minutes being in one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. I find it really hard to think of what's missing in Auckland.
I think you're pushing it there.
Don't be so cheeky.
The people of this country, people of Auckland especially, are very, very friendly. And and that makes you feel you're living with your kith and kin.
I just love our community. It's a sparkling city.
Loving Auckland, our diverse city. 104.6 Planet FM.
Take It From Us brings you real stories from real people, sharing their experiences of mental distress and journeys to recovery. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on 104.6 Planet FM, or catch the latest episodes at planetaudio.org.nz/takeitfromus. It's a half hour of commercial-free music coming up next now here on Planet FM, taking us through to Samlyn Khmer with news, music and updates from Cambodia on air at 2:10. We'll be right back.